Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Well, there's a man who's about to probably become the next Attorney General of the United States of America. And he's a man who defended Donald Trump's proposal to ban Muslims from entering the country, to cancel funds to sanctuary cities. They're challenging the 14th Amendment's guaranteed a birth citizenship. He did that as well. He's a man who said the Voting Rights Act is a piece of intrusive legislation and wanted to destroy it and not update the law. I remember at one point he only disapproved of the Ku Klux Klan after he found that some of their members smoked reefer. And also tried to jail people in his state for registering people to vote and pushing voting rights. So Jeff Sessions is the man I'm talking about. Senator, who was also rejected in 1986, even by his Republican colleagues, to be a federal judge because of his racist outbursts in the past. Hearings are being held this week in a real rush, it seems. We are joined in studio by Jessel Knorr, who is reporter and producer for The Real News, covering the story and many more. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, co-editor of Blackberries and Redbones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics of Africana Communities, as well as her latest book on Obama 2.0 that she edited. Good to have you in the studio again, Kimberly.
Thank you.
And y'all can join us, 410-319-8888. So you've been covering this. Just let's talk a bit about this man. What this can portend. We talked to Sherrilyn Ifill. On Friday, she joins us, but Thursday or Friday last week, she was on the show talking about this, and there's a whole push by the LDF and the NAACP to stop this and to make people aware. So your take.
All right. So last Monday, there was a day of action at his Jeff Sessions' offices in Alabama, and six members of the NAACP were arrested.
Well, had a sit-in.
Yeah, they had a sit-in right at their offices. And today, again, they are having another day of action in Alabama. They're holding prayer vigils and having press conferences, try to really raise awareness about what their concerns are for Jeff Sessions. And I had a chance to speak with the president of the Alabama NAACP yesterday. And, I mean, their primary concern are still the same issues that were raised in the 86 hearing. And as you said, it was a Republican-controlled Judiciary Committee, which is appearing, which now he led since then, and now he's appearing in front of Tuesday and Wednesday, that actually rejected him. And so what I've been doing is I actually tracked down one of his former colleagues that testified in 1986.
Against him?
Against him, Gerald Hebert.
And, who was then what?
So he was a young DOJ lawyer, and he worked with Jeff Sessions in the early 80s when Jeff Sessions was the U.S. Attorney General to Alabama. And so one of the things that came out is that Jeff Sessions called the NAACP and ACLU un-American for their work registering voters, fighting for civil rights, and also for opposing the U.S.-backed Contra war in Nicaragua, which is really interesting because the U.S. had armed basically terrorists to go into Nicaragua and undermine the left-wing Sandinista government there. And so I talked to Hebert, and he told me the story of what happened in 86 because, the Department of Justice colleagues of Sessions had to fill out a questionnaire, and they didn't think they would get called in. But Senator Strom Thurmond's office, the Republican from South Carolina, actually called him in and said, "You have to save Jeff Sessions. His nomination is under threat because of these things that are coming up." And they told him, "If you don't save his job, if you don't write this, we're gonna fire you." And Hebert said, "You don't have the power to do that. You don't run the Department of Justice." And he went up there and he testified about the comments he had made, calling the ACLU un-American and calling the NAACP un-American. And Jeff Sessions never really had an answer for that. He tried to defend that phrase, that terminology, but he never really, defended himself adequately in the eyes of the committee members, obviously. And then the point Hebert made is that if you were accused of racism 30 years ago, if Republicans saw you as too racist to be a federal judge, a lifetime appointment, then you'd have thought you would have spent the next 30 years trying to correct that record. But he hasn't done that. He's opposed civil rights legislation. He opposed the appointment of Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, two women to the Supreme Court. You know, his anti-immigrant rhetoric, his positions are still of deep concern to many civil rights advocates around the country.
Calling one of his aides, who was African-American in the legislative committee, a boy.
Yes.
All that took place as well. So, you know, Kimberly, I've been thinking a lot about this. Well, there's two ways. I mean, A, there's a historical look, and B, is kind of looking forward what this might mean, because I think there's, with two Democratic senators, Manchin from West Virginia, one of them whose name I'm blocking on, saying they would vote for Sessions. Mm-hmm. It's probably, there's little doubt that he'll probably be nominated and voted on by the U.S. Senate. And when I look at this historically, I see this over and over again. I'm really believe this, that we are looking like at America in 1877, at the end of Reconstruction, before segregation was instituted legally in the 1890s, during the period of terror and more. And not saying, I'm not predicting all this massive terror. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that the pushback, you know, and then when the movement pushed hard from the 50s, 54 to the 70s, there was this backlash that happened from the 1970s through now that elected Donald Trump and brought us this crazy world we're in now. We've elected the first African-American president, and now there's been this kind of, in many ways, very right-wing, in some deep cases, racist pushback to elect Donald Trump as president of the United States. Now we have Jeff Sessions as
attorney. And so I would say that you're pretty accurate with the assessment that you're making, that there is tremendous pushback. And I think, you know, of course, not that President Obama was responsible for that pushback, but he certainly was kind of that final nail on the head of, we're done. This is enough. It's gone too far. We need to do something very different in our country, because it is moving away and so far away from who we consider ourselves to be that we've got to take drastic action. And, I mean, Donald Trump is drastic. I mean, there's no other way to say it, that all that he represents, all that in terms of his demeanor and how he carries himself, is quite and vastly different than any other presidential candidate that we have had, and certainly one that has been affirmed and accepted as our president.
I mean, if we are entering an era where we are, where, let's take, wait a minute, this past election, and we haven't done the program about this yet. We plan to do it in the next week with Ari Berman before Donald Trump is sworn in. Looking at this week of Sessions hearings, but also looking at voting rights in this past election. If you look at the allegations that took place in states like Wisconsin and other states around the country where voting rights were abridged, young people, African Americans, mm-hmm. People of color, and others, that and voting rights being the linchpin of one of the linchpins of the civil rights struggle of the 1960s, and something the law passed in 1968, and then you saw what the Supreme Court did in its Shelby decision. That, I mean, we are facing, it seems like, a very dangerous time when it comes to there's no right in the Constitution to vote to start with. So what we're facing here, I think that, you know, I think people don't realize, many people don't realize how deep this is. Many people maybe do, but.
Yeah, and I think that's another another thing that people that know Jeff Sessions, that know his track record, are concerned about, because as Attorney General, it's your job to defend those rights, defend all citizens. And, you know, people raise the 1985 case in Alabama, where as Attorney General, Jeff Sessions prosecuted three African-American activists for registering the elderly to vote.
In Alabama.
In the Black Belt of Alabama,
right.
An area that had been, the vote had been suppressed for more than 100 years. And there's lots of voter intimidation, there's a lot of voter fraud, but not being carried out in the African-American community. And you know, if you speak to people down there, going to the polls was still something that people didn't really want to do. They wanted to mail in their ballots because of everything associated with going to the polls, being attacked, being harassed, being intimidated. And these activists, they were elderly. One was the former field secretary for Dr. Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. He actually helped carry his casket after his funeral. And these were the people that Jeff Sessions went after in 85. And they were facing federal charges, more than 100 years in prison. and
for what he considered voter fraud.
Yeah, what he considered voting 100
years.
Fraud.
Right.
Helping the elderly mail in their ballots. And thankfully, a jury found them not guilty, but that was one of the key things when it came out, that even the judge of the case said, you know, I don't think this case has merits. They, you know, the whole thing was just an act of voter intimidation to find the so-called voter fraud that has been the excuse the Republicans have used to, you know, they talk about voter fraud. That's why they have all these restrictive measures in more than a dozen states around the country. And so Jeff Sessions was sort of a pioneer in trying to find this so-called voter fraud that they use to have these voter ID laws and to restrict voting.
And what I fear is that with his confirmation, they will only become more restrictive. And he will ensure that that is happening across the country and not just in these particular states where we've seen it happen thus far.
So, I mean, pardon me. I think that folks, I do want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Send an email to talk@steinershow.org. Jump onto our Facebook page, which I'll check in a moment. But I really want to hear your ideas and thoughts about this. This is something we'll be covering during the course of this week and in the weeks to come, but covering with these hearings on Sessions that start tomorrow. Do you plan to attend them?
I'll be there on Wednesday. Jeff Sessions is one of five confirmations that'll be being held on Wednesday.
So. Which is also unprecedented to slam all these very important confirmation hearings into one week at the same time as other important votes are taking place in the Senate.
And the I know you had Democracy on before, Democracy Now on before, but the head of the government watchdog on ethics said these people haven't even submitted their ethics reviews for their ethics disclosures for review, so they haven't even been vetted yet, and so Jeff Sessions has submitted his questionnaire for the Senate, but what's interesting is that his former colleagues again spoken out about what's in that questionnaire, because he was asked to list the 10 most important cases that he worked on. And what's interesting is that those cases are in there. So the cases he listed are from before 1986. Mm-hmm. So you would have thought they would have been the same ones he listed on his 86 questionnaire.
But not.
But they're different. And four of those cases are civil rights cases. And so
that he listed as important.
As important. But his colleagues that worked on those cases said he didn't have anything to do with those.
Yeah,
he signed off on the paperwork.
Very minor role.
He played a minor role. So he's trying to reconstruct, salvage his track record, his history. And,
he's constructing a narrative that will help tell the story that he, in fact, is a changed man, that he is different than the person that was unable to seek confirmation earlier as attorney general, and that's what makes him a viable candidate now.
Yeah, and one of those cases is a voting rights case that he claims to have worked on, but he didn't work on.
So I wonder what you both see as the danger in the next 4 years. Let's see. Maybe people argue that Trump will not last the 4 years. Well, that may be true. We don't know. We'll see what happens. I have my crystal ball. I left it in the car. I meant to bring it in. But what it would mean, whether he's president or whether Pence becomes president of the United States.
I don't know which of those I want.
Sessions will probably be attorney general. What do you think that will mean?
I think there will be a number of questions that come into play around voting rights. And I think that is something that requires those of us on the ground to be galvanizing now and able to generate enough support behind pushing back on such initiatives. I also have concerns, which have already been raised in a number of articles that I've seen on Jeff Sessions, about what he will do regarding civil rights cases, because he does consider the notion of civil rights being such a broad term that allows the federal government to what he refers to as overreach and make decisions that he thinks should reside just within states, but also should not be seen as violations of civil rights. And clearly around issues for the LGBTQ community, that's real. I mean, for someone that has come out so ardently against the notion of gay marriage and rights that are associated with transgendered individuals, this is someone who could easily roll back so much of what was done over the last 8 years.
And I think for people in Baltimore especially, with that consent decree being negotiated right now, you know, if it's not signed, if it's not, and it's a point that Sherrilyn Ifill makes, if it's not signed, if it's not in front of a federal judge by the time Trump takes office, it's going to be up to Jeff Sessions. It's going to be up to Donald Trump to enforce that. And we already know Jeff Sessions is deeply hostile to consent decrees. He opposes them. He considers them dangerous and an end around the democratic process. But what we found in places like Baltimore is that, you know, the city can't oversee its own police force. They need an outside actor, to have some oversight and to, you know, have a hand on what is going on with the police department, with the egregious violations of constitutional rights happening across the city.
Yeah, we will see. I mean, clearly, I think it's safe to say there'll be no more consent decrees around America. Mm-hmm. There'll be no more DOJ investigations of police brutality or illegal interactions.
That's very frightening, because then we're talking about a police state, one that doesn't have any oversight to ensure that citizens are being protected against the force that, in fact, is here to protect us, and that raises serious doubts and concerns.
And I mean, we'll also see what happens with the signing. The mayor has still not signed that consent decree, mm-hmm. which we won't talk about today, but doesn't have much time to sign it. We've got, because she has to sign it, then it has to go before a federal judge, mm-hmm. who has to agree to the terms that have been agreed to, and then they appoint a monitor to oversee the process.
Once it's in front of a federal judge, Trump can't touch it. But if it's not there yet and time's running out, then, you know, it's probably not going to happen. So that's something people in Baltimore should be concerned about.
Yep. Let's go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. And Donna, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing?
Very well. Good morning.
My concern is, and your guests are wonderful in their commentaries and, you know, discussion. The pendulum keeps swinging back forth, because I remember the Bork issue, and that was a big...
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party in the last 20 or 30 years, we have been, like you said, in 1870, it's like we feel like we're back in 1877. We keep wanting to... You know, when we progress and there's civil rights and there's equity, then all of a sudden there's this grandiose setback, another 20 years, and we continuously swing back and forth. And my question is to your guests, we're always put in this situation, and when will we as an American people, especially the Democratic Party is supposed to be representing the people, when are they going to wake up to be more structured and organized and cohesive and preventing this constant pendulum, this 25-year pendulum switch, where we constantly are faced with these same type of cabinet members when we get a conservative or a Republican as president? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
So I think I would respond immediately with, first of all, I agree with the caller, but I also think some of what complicates this, in particular for the Democratic Party, is because it's attempting to represent so many constituencies that have very different issues. I mean, civil rights in general is a major issue, I think, for a number of individuals represented in the Democratic Party. But I also think there are so many other agendas at play that need to or desire to be accomplished that trying to do so is what ends up diverting and separating the agenda for the Democratic Party in a very different way than what we see happening with conservatives. And in terms of, especially for this particular election, the galvanizing that took place with evangelicals was amazing. And it continues in a very eerie way, in my personal opinion, as someone who grew up Southern Baptist. But the way in which they have galvanized and supported the agenda of the conservatives in this country gives a sense that they are more singularly focused, that they already have their eyes on the prize in ways that I don't think the Democratic Party has been able to accomplish.
So, you know, when I pick up on this point about the question of how this affects police in this country and justice, the FOP for the first time and did not endorse Romney, but did endorse Trump. The Federal Fraternal Order of Police. the Border Patrol Union endorsed Donald Trump. The police union themselves, in their internal poll, said that 84% of police patrol is a law enforcement magazine. 84% of police officers voted for Donald Trump. Now, everybody has a right to vote for whom they wish in this country, okay. Which I think is important. And I've always been a Democrat with a small D. But that, you know, when you talk about the relationship, that should give us pause here about what could be created under a Sessions Attorney General. Maybe I'm overblowing this, but it gives me pause at the moment as I think about how that parses out.
Well, I think police officers around the country know that the next time they shoot a unarmed black man, they're not going to face federal charges. They're not going to face an investigation. We already know local prosecutors almost never charge police officers. And now Donald Trump will have empowered officers, you know, police officers, white supremacists, to act as they wish with impunity. And they're not going to face consequences. And I think they realize that. And I think that's going to be the reality around the country.
And I also think, Donald Trump ran as the law and order candidate, that he was going to restore things back to a level of peace and tranquility that people want and desire in this country. And hearing those words, knowing that it wasn't about dialogue and coming to some common ground to understand the communities that law enforcement are policing and finding this shared space to say this is how we need to function and operate together, but more so very black and white, which is exactly how so many law enforcement officials operate, that it's very clear to them it's either or. It is not both and. It can never be both and. And so the idea that you had a candidate who gave us a clear sense of it's always on the side of law enforcement officials, of course, if I were in that occupation, I would embrace him as well.
No, right, right. And I think that I'm curious what you both think, and you've been covering this with some real depth, Jessel Knorr, that for those of us who have been involved in civil rights, involved in the struggle against racism, or have worked for workers' rights in America for decades and decades, what are the things that could come up that could derail this nomination? Is there anything that could derail this nomination?
Well, the one thing that, you know, and I was reading an article by Kamau Franklin, who's a civil rights attorney in Georgia.
Right.
And he's, you know, he actually was critical of the NAACP's efforts in Alabama. And he compared it to what was happening in North Carolina with the Moral Mondays, where they have hundreds of people come out. They're able to mass mobilize. And they weren't, you know, ultimately they weren't successful, but they have the governorship now in North Carolina, at least, right? But that didn't really happen. There weren't hundreds of people being arrested, right? And where's the Democratic Party talking about Jeff Sessions, talking about his racist history? Where are they mobilizing people, getting people to come out, you know, carry out civil disobedience, you know? And I think that's what it was going to take, you know?
Well, no, I hear that. And I think that's part of the struggle with the Democrats right now internally around Ellison's nomination as chairman of the DNC. That's the battle between does the establishment – continue down the establishment road completely and narrowly, or is it going to be a broader definition of what it means to be a member of the Democratic Party if you are a Democrat? And how does activism play a role in that? I mean, that's, I think, part of what you're talking about there.
I don't see there being anything that's going to hold up this confirmation. And I think, not being a naysayer, but certainly so much of what has transpired since November 7th seems to give us some indication that it really doesn't matter much what this particular incoming president does or says, that the fact that he is now in power and he plans to make America great again and what that entails for a number of those individuals that voted for him, that they see him as the person to make this happen and they are willing to take the risk of whatever decisions he makes in order to see that happen.
Now, this may be overblown, but I'm curious what kind of fears you all have about these next 4 years when it comes to things like Jeff Sessions being the Attorney General of the United States. And I hate to put it in a sense of fear because I've been pushing so much lately that we have to be more voices of light and not just always dwell on the darkness, but I mean,
well, what it means is we can't rely on the federal government to protect us, right? We can't rely on them to defend civil rights. It's going to take
or immigrants' rights or anybody's rights.
Yeah, it's going to take mass mobilization. It's going to take people in the streets, people putting themselves on the line. Even under Republican administrations, the Department of Justice will act. They will intervene in local police departments. They will intervene in cases when the alternative of them not intervening is open rebellion, right? And that happens in Democratic and Republican administrations, actually. So that has to be the equation there. There has to be mass mobilizations, and there has to be popular movements. And it's not going to be an attorney general backing them up. It's going to be opposing the entire administration.
Because you could see, Kimberly, that instead Black Lives Matter could be accused of some national federal conspiracy because they move from city to city to organize around these issues.
Yeah, well, at least in terms of just popular opinion, we throw around the terminology of them being a hate group already. And so for someone to find themselves in a position where there is something that occurs with members of this grassroots organization that really doesn't have a hierarchy at all, right, that I can easily see someone trying to make a point and bring a case and suit against Black Lives Matter to suggest that they, in fact, are what is causing so much of the hate that exists in this country.
Well, this is just the beginning of this. We'll look at this again with Jessica later in the week after we see what's happening with the hearings. And we'll bring some other folks on as well as we will cover the hearings all week long. Well, not all week long, but later in the week we'll be covering the hearings that have taken place this week in Washington, D.C. And Jessica Norwick, as reporter and producer of The Real News, does an incredible job. You do, man. You really do. You really get under the things and you bring us some real light. So I appreciate the work you do.
Thanks, Mark. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Good to have you in the studio here. And Dr. Kimberly Moffitt will be remaining with us for the next segment of the Mark Steiner Show. You're staying, right?
Yes.
And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, on the way to break, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ Baltimore's Credit Union is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We'll be right back. Stay with us.